Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Confident Hypnotherapist podcast. Hope you're doing well wherever you are in the world. Today, I have the remarkable Lance Baker with me. Now, going through the list of credits here for Lance, founder of Branches of Healing, author of Questioning Skills for IMR Hypnosis and a Swan Protocol, trainer, Reiki master, and I think anyone who saw his recent presentations at the Hypno Summit 2021 knows that he's a bloody legend. So, Lance, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Quite the introduction.
Yeah, I like to ramp it up a bit, you know, make sure that people feel recognized, seen, and loved.
Yes, well, you couldn't use Newcastle's best hypnotherapist because you already had him on. Well, I listened to the show too.
Shout out to Brett.
Yes, love Brett. My closest competitor, my closest friend.
Say, there's almost like this Thunderdome thing happening here where two hypnotherapists go in, one comes out. I don't know. We'll have to see how that
goes. No, I love it. His office is two blocks from mine. Really? We catch up all the time. It's great. He's my best friend in the hypnosis world.
He's going to love that there's a shout out to him so early on in your episodes. So, Lance, I guess, you know, the obvious question is how did you come across hypnosis to begin with? What was it that brought you to the hypnosis world?
Well, it depends on what way you take that question, I guess. So I have an upbringing in sales and managing and things like that. So I was introduced to NLP trainings quite a bit, but they were never called NLP trainings. They were sales trainings. But with my knowledge now, I know I went to NLP trainings. So I had some NLP training years and years ago. Then I started to learn Reiki, as you mentioned, Reiki Master, from the start of doing that. Like within the first couple of weeks, I was being led by the energy and just doing different processes than what I was taught. And turns out I was doing mesmerism. I wasn't doing Reiki. And so I was putting people into trance from that. But again, I still didn't know about mesmerism back then or think I was doing hypnosis. So I was just putting people to sleep because I'm boring. But I had a hypnotherapist like just be astounded with what I was doing. So I went and explored hypnosis originally through Rick Collingwood. And luckily he was the perfect person to have my first introduction to because he brought up mesmerism. And I'm like, that's that thing I've been doing.
He loves mesmerism. Yeah.
Yes. So that was really my introduction to it. But I don't think you really understand what hypnosis is until you've been doing it a few years before you really start to see how much everything can be hypnotic or that once you start what you actually can be capable of doing. So there's a big roundabout answer.
Yeah, no, perfect. And, you know, I want to come back to mesmerism since you raised that, but how much did your definition of what hypnosis is shift and change over that time?
Oh, massively. My view of hypnosis when I first started, like I got up in Rick's class and was a demonstration and he did a hand-to-face induction on me, did some basic stuff and then emerged me and I was like, I wasn't hypnotized. And so I didn't think it worked because I was expecting that blackout state, I'm a robot, come back, whatever. And that didn't happen. But I know now from the moment a finger twitch happened on my hand, I was in hypnosis. He created communication with the deeper part of my consciousness and did things. And I can't remember what he was working on at that stage. He probably just did it and ended it. So I was thinking, well, that I wasn't hypnotized. Everybody I put through in that first class, I didn't think I hypnotized. When I first opened my clinic, I thought I had a lot of failures. In hindsight, I can see I had a lot of successes. I just didn't know how to work with that. the more you start to work with it, the more you realize, well, a deeper part of consciousness is always listening. I work a lot with ideomotor responses, you know, and one of the first questions I always ask in any session, once I've opened communication up, is have you been listening to the conversation that say I was working with you, that Lawrence and I were having before I initiated this hypnotic interaction? I'm at about 90% yes, that part has been paying attention beforehand. So from now on, the way I work is as soon as I meet somebody, I'm trying to work out what the part inside is up to. Like, why is it doing this thing of why they've called me up? And so the hypnotic interaction goes from that very first second, because I'm trying to build rapport with that part and then play to get that change happening before I actually even do any hypnosis. And I've had some sessions where I've ran out of time just doing counseling with somebody that haven't done any hypnosis, and they're about to walk out the door. I'm like, let's just do this one thing. I know that part's been listening. Can you show me a yes? Get a flicker. Can you show me a no? Get a no. Can you do all the stuff I talked about? Yes. Boom, done. It was a 1-minute hypnosis session, but it took the 90 minutes of what I talked to the person and made that hypnosis. Because really, I believe my view of hypnosis, which goes against a lot of people, is hypnosis has nothing to do with trance. It has nothing to do with anything else. It's communication with a deeper part inside and getting some change to happen.
You kind of headed that question there where I was thinking of going as well, in a sense of, you know, I was saying to you beforehand that, you know, one of the things I love about watching any of your presentations is that there's clearly a thought out deeper understanding for yourself about what hypnosis is for you. And, you know, there's so many different, you know, the easiest way to spark a debate in any hypnosis forum is to sit there and say, what is hypnosis? And you have that kind of theoretical, I can't even talk today. You have those different models, whether it be state versus non-state, all that sort of thing that comes up. You know, can I ask you, what do you understand hypnosis to be at a personal level?
For me, it's communication. Yeah. So I don't believe in states. I personally rarely get into a deep state. When I've been in a deep state, it hasn't been a deeper change than when somebody I have great rapport with makes a good suggestion. I treat it as anything I do that's hypnotic. If I don't get two-way communication with a part of consciousness, at least an ideomotor response, preferably direct voice or automatic writing, then I'm disappointed. Then I feel I haven't done hypnosis. But I could do guided imagery and direct suggestion and stuff like that with that and not get that feedback, but I'll walk away going, I didn't do hypnosis. So that differs from most people. So I could have somebody in a somnambulistic trance but not be getting that feedback that's enough for that communication. That's where I go, I didn't do hypnosis. But, yeah.
You mentioned direct voice there, and you know, I guess that's a reference to Bob Burns and the Swan, which I know that you have a lot of experience with, and Bob holds you in high respect as well. What is it about the Swan that you found so appealing over time?
I love Bob's work. I'm not going to credit him with the first one to do direct voice. That comes from Animal Magnetism with Poisigan.
Right, okay, so this is where I'm showing my lack of awareness and knowledge here. Yes. And, you know, I've got mesmerisms in here going, I want to come back to that. So, but I'll let you finish off about
yourself. Bob's work is where that switch point happened, where I really started to understand hypnosis. So where that was 5 years ago this week that I really, really played with the Swan. So Rick had asked me to bring Bob out to Sydney to teach because he couldn't make it happen. And Bob wanted to come out, and I wanted to be more involved in the hypnosis community. So I said, yes. Watched some of Bob's videos online, ordered his DVD. It hadn't turned up yet, but just worked out the process, did a self-swan, was quite surprised. Previously, my ideomotor communication before that was just a signal to get an agreeance at the end of a session. That was it. It wasn't like yes, no, maybe. There was no, there wasn't much two-way communication. It was direct suggestions. Then at the end, do you agree? That could have been a fuck off. Oh, sorry. Depending on your thing. Could have been a yes, could have been a no. I didn't know. I just got a signal that you're going to compromise, but it could have just been a big flip off of what I was getting. And then, yeah, I started playing with Bob's Swan, and I loved it because there was no trance, that I didn't have to go through a big ritual. The only perceived failure was the hand didn't move. And I was like, well, that's because we didn't do hypnosis. That's okay. We can move on to this. Put your hand like this. Let's go and do this, or move into mesmerism. So I had way more openings for if I failed. So I played with it. I took it to my clinic, and there was a beautician that worked there. I did it on her. Her fingers didn't move, but she could feel the signals on different things and could translate for me what her subconscious was doing. And she got good change on what that was. Then I went to Melbourne, and that's where this 5-year thing is, because Facebook's given me my 5-year memories of this trip to Melbourne. And I spent a couple of weeks down there, and everybody I spoke to, I swan. Within 5 minutes of meeting them, usually, I was like, put your hand like this. I want to do an experiment. And I just want everybody. And so I spent 2 weeks pretty much the whole time. All I was doing was communicating with consciousness. And within that, I got, would have been about halfway through that, I met this woman, a child psychologist, who had some issues going on. Did it with her. The responses were like this. They were crazy. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. So I said, well, I can't get that. Could you just talk? Could you say hello? Hello. Actually, no, it wasn't hello. I think it swore at me. It definitely did a lot afterwards. Like, I had a 5-hour verbal conversation with this part inside. And that conversation there really is what changed it. So this part had stopped her from suiciding decades before, when she'd broken up with a partner, she had a pet die, all within the space of 2 weeks, and she got really suicidal. So this part stepped up, wouldn't let her create relationships with people, wouldn't let her get a pet. Like, she had nobody close to her, because people close to you opens up that level of pain if they disappear that was life-threatening. So this part inside was super keen on doing its job. It thought, I've done an amazing job. It told me so, because she's alive today and she hasn't tried to suicide again in the past decade. So I'm doing a fantastic job. You can get lost, hypno boy. And so I had a 5-hour debate with this part inside. And all I got was, I got it to think about trying things my way. And that was it. I couldn't get a direct agreement. I didn't have the skills I have now, because that was my first 2-way conversation with the deeper part inside. But it really opened things up, because she kept apologizing in between. So back then, I used to hold my hand on somebody when I was talking to that part and off, and use it as a release switch so I could talk to the conscious person, talk to the other part. And as I was releasing it, as soon as I did, every time she said, I'm so sorry. I never talk to you like that. I don't talk to anybody like that. But it's interesting. That's exactly how I talk to myself. I hear this stuff all day, every day in my mind. And yeah, there was F-bombs, C-bombs, and all the rest coming out at me continually over that 5 hours. But from that verbal conversation and a bunch of just most of the rest were just ideomotor-based communications, I really started to understand the complexities and start to see the variants of how different parts are with inside of people's consciousness. And it really sparked off. I'm gonna seem really really uneducated with the way I explain how my model of consciousness was built. Mm-hmm. It was from a sitcom I used to watch when I was 14 or so, called Herman's Head.
I remember Herman's Head, yeah.
Yeah, that's where I developed my understanding of consciousness back then. But I thought, this is just me being an idiot teenager buying into TV too much. But that week really locked that in, that I realized that was real. That silly TV show actually explained consciousness better than anything else I'd been exposed to. Being able to visually represent, and that's what I tried to create with that hypnosummit thing, visually represent that there is different consciousness inside and they've got a little bit different personalities and definitely different goals of what they want the conscious person to have within life. And so I try and make it so it's all about that conversational approach with that. And yeah, I think playing with Bob Swan is the absolute direct key of what got that ball rolling for certain.
To have a 5-hour conversation as well, I think that would be quite a daunting prospect.
Yes.
A lot of people, you know, what was it that allowed you to have that confidence to be able to step up into an experience like that?
I was just experimental. Yeah. I always love to experiment.
I'm curious to see what's going to happen.
I think the reason why I could let it go so long was this woman was a psychologist.
Yep.
And I stopped and asked her a few times because, like, well, things got weird. So I kept stopping to say, are you sure you're comfortable with pursuing this? So, yeah, I'm massively keen to see where this goes right now. That we just went till it was getting nowhere further. But, yeah, it's...
You've mentioned mesmerism, and even in this short amount of time, I've highlighted my naivety towards it and an experience with it. And I don't doubt that I'm alone in that. And I don't know if this is possible, but is there a way you can perhaps offer for some of the people listening who may not know what mesmerism is, how it's relevant to hypnosis, its connection to it?
Yes. Yeah. Well, the average school hypnosis book fluffs off mesmerism in the first 5 minutes or 2 pages as a charlatan named Anton Mesmer, who did this thing, ripped people off, accidentally studied, discovered placebo effect and the power of the imagination. And later on, smart people worked out how to make hypnosis from what he was doing. And that is from people who weren't comfortable to sit in woo-woo for a little bit first to see what happens. So it's about the energies of the universe, the way his thesis was based on the energies of the sun and the moon, how they could affect the tides. Mm-hmm. Clearly, if they can affect the tides, they could affect our bodies.
Yeah.
And so it was on that. He looked into magnetic healing and was using magnets for healing and moved to just using his hands and being able to project this etheric fluid out of his hands and his eyes to put people into trance by just doing passes over their body. And healing would happen. So people would drop out into these states where they weren't conscious and they would quite often twitch and convulse. Sometimes it would get a little bit orgasmic as well. So that was a thing that made other people as outsiders not like this rich man that's getting most of his clients that are female into this sleepy sort of state, and then some of them are also really enjoying it. So lots of people didn't like that avenue. But while he was doing that, he never spoke, he never used words. He had some direct voice actually happen where parts inside were talking. He thought it was gibberish and didn't like it, wouldn't converse at all. But one of his pupils, Mikey Poisiger, he did. He engaged in conversation and found things out. And one of the main people he worked with early on was just a young peasant that was on his family's plantation. And the kid was dumb. Like he was a peasant kid in that sort of time. He had no education. He didn't talk eloquently. He was a worker. But when he was in this somnambulistic trance state and would communicate, he would communicate like a highly educated man. And this part inside knew of everything that went on within young Victor Ace's life. But it also knew about all this other stuff that was going on inside. It could diagnose what was going on in other people that would give them healing And then they do those processes and healing would happen. Sometimes that would be through the mesmeric passes. Sometimes it would be through like a homeopathic thing or an operation or a change in diet, things like this. But Poisinger's work is what made hypnosis, because that's where it started to get psychological. He actually did counseling on Victor Race without counseling ever having been a thing. So I'm sure his ways of counseling were pretty rough and terrible. There's not much of his work translated. I'm about to start going through some of it to hopefully find something good that I can give the world of his French. But it's from there that inspired other things. So psychology evolved out of that. Hypnosis evolved out of that. Without those sort of conversations with the somnambulistic client, and somnambulism means sleepwalker because they were in this mesmeric sleep, but they could walk and talk. But that's why it's important to us today, really, I think, is because Mesmer created a state that was just for healing, but his pupil found a way of making it a psychological thing. And then that just slowly evolved, that people took out little bits as they went along to make it more and more only psychological rather than this weird energetic thing to see where we go. But
when you look at yourself as a hypnotist, how much of the work do you see as being energy versus that kind of psychotherapy?
In a way, all of it, but in a way, not. So the core principle behind mesmerism is believe and want. You've got to hold a belief that you can make that change, and you've got to really want that change. So you've got to be transparent in actually wanting that change for that client and connecting with them and having that real desire. But you've got to have that ability that you can do it as well, and that trust that you can do it. And that's where it's a bit of a catch-22 for a learning hypnotist. You've got to get some success to feel confident. So this is your podcast is great for that, because you're giving tools every episode of ways that people can develop that confidence so that they can have that element of mesmerism without even understanding that. It's going to happen regardless of whether you think you're doing mesmerism or not.
This is fascinating for me because, you know, quite often in any training you have people say, well, you have to have that belief that you can help this person, this change is possible. Because, you know, without that, the other person's unconscious might pick up on it, or other sort of things that are thrown around at that time.
Yeah, but you're projecting that energy into their consciousness. Yeah. Now, how do our brains and our nervous system work? Electronic impulses, essentially. Through the nervous system. It's energy running through our nervous system. So the amount of people that describe things that sound like energy that have no idea about energy, when I do a swan with them, they'll say about the jolts of energy running up their arm, that they can feel it before they see it. They'll describe a bubble of energy around their arm, like there was a weird bubbly thing around my hand. What was that? It was colder. It was warmer. Like they feel an energetic thing when I'm not doing energy. I'm just talking to a different part of the consciousness because I've invited part of the consciousness to come and be here so that energy moves. Instead of being in their brain and talking to them, now it's in their hand talking to me.
Yeah.
And so early on, like you asked before, where did my opinion of what hypnosis is change? It's constantly shifting. So until reasonably recently, I didn't think of idiomotor response being an energetic thing, that it was even linked with mesmerism or anything like that. That was me putting on the hypnotist hat rather than the mesmerist hat. But now I'm seeing that as, well, no, that's the emotion and the energy that's there just moved to that spot now and able to open a communication. And so I see those direct parallels.
I love that. You know, what's funny is that last year I had what I would describe as my own spiritual awakening. If 2019 version of Lawrence was told that there was going to be a spiritual awakening in 2020, I probably would have laughed. But the thing that shifted it for me was, funnily enough, my own understanding of energy. And just even the difference in energy being in the same room with the person and being able to work with them versus the challenges of online was the first kind of subtle noticing that I had of it. But the more I kind of thought about it, the more those kind of layers peeled back and I began to recognize that energy was present in literally everything that we were doing. And yeah, it's funny that you kind of say that. I'm having another moment of light bulbs going off in my own mind there as you say that.
Yeah. Well, I can, the other way that I know that an idiomotor response is energetic based is I can be doing just mesmerism or Reiki sessions on people and it's completely energetic. There's no words. Their eyes are closed. They can't even have a suggestion based off what I'm doing of seeing something to respond. But when my arm goes over a certain spot, a certain part of their body will start twitching. That says that that's linked. And I can go away and I can come back and it starts twitching again. I can go away and it come back and it starts twitching again. At other times, I can think, show me a yes, and one arm will twitch. And I can think, show me a no, and a different arm will twitch. And I can do what I would do in a verbal way of hypnosis, of getting responses and getting change, sometimes without opening my mouth and without them knowing that anything like that's happening, their hands just having a little twitch here and there to amplify the healing that they've asked for. And I could just be in my own head that response is meaning that, and it could be random, but I've seen the effects of it more often than not that says, well, that's real. That happens.
Yeah. What I find interesting is that I know, thinking back to that 2019 version of me, looking at people that were more energy-based work, that I look at that and think, well, that's fascinating, but that's not me. And then last year, I kind of had that moment where it began to shift and I began to recognize that there was something of me in it. And I imagine there are a few people like that as well, but we're not at that point where we're fully utilizing it yet. There's still that kind of journey to go. And you may not know the answer to this as well, but I'll ask it, you know, in your opinion, what advice would you give someone who, like myself, is kind of exploring this area now, beginning to get their head around it, but isn't at that level that you're talking about the work you do? What needs to happen to help us make those steps towards that?
Play with it. I'd recommend anybody find a way to get some sort of energy activation and play with it so you can start to get the ability to feel that energy that will give you a bit more of a conscious understanding of it. I'll give you a link that you can share to the listeners that is a video I've made up that helps people get that connection. Again, it's not quite as powerful because it's a pre-recorded thing that I energetically set up at the beginning of COVID. So it's not a live one-on-one thing. If you can meet somebody in person and get them to open up your energy, that's going to work a little bit easier. The easiest context to find that, which you can find it pretty much in any town pretty easily, is just to go learn a Reiki 1 class. It'll at least open that doorway. Reiki's not mesmerism. I believe Reiki's influenced from mesmerism, but I don't have any hard evidence of that. But it'll at least give you something you can start to play with to do. But I'll give a resource that's got two different exercises and an activation that people can play with, and it'll also have a session they can watch to see what a Reiki session can look like.
That would be amazing, and I'm sure people are listening to this and being curious and fascinated, and you know, hopefully jump on that to see those examples and those exercises as well. Knowing that you're a trainer as well, you know, what do you see as being some of the biggest challenges newbies to hypnosis, or even some more experienced hypnotists tend to experience?
I think the biggest challenge is people's confidence in themselves of what they can do and learning too much. Yes. Like my thing is learn something basic and play with it. And then learn something extra and play with that. And then throw something extra in and play with that. And then see how you can mix some of the things you already learned and experiment with those before just learning something new. It's too easy to sign up for a dozen classes in a year. Mm. Like that's a really easy thing to do in this day and age, especially when like the last 2 years with COVID, everybody's doing online things now.
Oh, yeah. It's been a blessing and a curse at the same time. But yes. The reality is I've spoken to people who are doing 4 or 5 courses at once. And my immediate thought was, how are you absorbing all of that?
Yeah.
You know, I've been guilty of doing it occasionally, though, so maybe I'm a hypocrite. I don't know.
my advice for people, and the main thing I try and get my students to do, is open up pathways of communication. Play with idiomotor response. Have a talk with your own consciousness.
Hmm.
Talking with yourself isn't crazy. Talking with yourself helps you understand who you are and what drivers are behind you, what pushes you into different things, why you react certain different ways. And that's going to help you understand how other people react and why they're doing different things. And you've got a lot more room to play if you do that, because there's no script. Once you've started that, it's a conversation. Back to one of your previous questions, how to talk with that element of that woman's consciousness for 5 hours. I could sit down and talk with you for 5 hours over a few beers, no problems. It's the same thing. When you're talking with a deeper element of consciousness, it's just like you're in a room with somebody else. If you can talk to somebody for 5 hours, you can talk to an element of consciousness for 5 hours. If you struggle with your communication skills to talk to somebody for 5 minutes, you're probably going to need a script, because you're going to struggle with talking to an element of consciousness and just go with direct suggestion, guided imagery, and find some scripts to download and do it that way. But it really helps open things up. If you're not confident in doing that, play the 20 questions game with a 5-year-old. That'll help you learn your
game with a 5-year-old. What's that?
20 questions games is where you ask yes or no questions are the only things they can respond to, and you've got to try and work out what they're thinking about or what they've got. So get you used to asking yes or no questions.
Right. I must admit, I've not heard the 20 questions game before. I have to find a 5-year-old now.
Yes, you can do it with an adult, but sometimes doing it with a 5-year-old helps, because elements of consciousness can quite often be like 5-year-old logic with what's behind stuff.
Absolutely true. You're mentioning about developing that communication, and I know that you have a self-hypnosis class coming up soon with Inez Simpson. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, it's mostly going to be based on her processes of Simpson protocol, of anchoring in just different levels of hypnosis, her piece deep and higher, which is somnambulism, Esdaile state, and then a higher connection with your higher mind to be able to pull through that higher guidance that you need within your life to move forward for what you're actually here for and for healing. And so most of her processes in a session is questioning based, but in this, it's more just a simple thing and be in the state and enjoy it and allow consciousness to make that change. I'll be adding in some stuff of mixing that with the other self-hypnosis thing you shared the other day of mine, where it is that idiomotor communication of asking for help and support and finding out answers.
Apologies for the appearance of the cat there for the moment. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you can close a door, but the cat will still find a way in. So in terms of self-hypnosis, how much do you use that personally yourself? And, you know, what approaches do you tend to use there?
Every day. So it started with self-swan. I had intentions before of recording something and listening to it, and I never got around to it. I never liked listening to other people's self-hypnosis audio tracks. They just never did it for me, mostly because most people talk in visual language on the majority of the ones I've found of those, and I am I've got aphantasia. I get blackness when I close my eyes. There's nothing. So that sort of method never worked well for me. But as I mentioned, when I started playing with the Swan, it was self-swan was my first directive there. The very like first couple of questions I asked, I got a no to something I expected a yes to. And then I asked the question again in a slightly different way, and then I got a yes. And the no was the difference of my wording. Part of my mind was way more pedantic than I was, and it taught me something with the way I was asking that question of what the real issue was there. So that showed me the power of how handy that is, and it's been part of my daily life really since then. There's been times it hasn't. There's been a lot of times it hasn't. There was a year I made a New Year's resolution where I said, well, anything I ask for advice with, I'm going to follow. I'll work with you. So everything, if I ask, should I be doing this, and I get a yes, I'm going to go do it. So that year, I didn't do as much self-hypnosis because I started getting scared of what I agreed to. And I didn't want to back out on an agreement I'd made with my own consciousness. So I maintained a firm grip on that, but there was a lot of questions I wanted to ask. I didn't have the balls to ask. But after that year, and I was free from that little contract I made with myself, I use it constantly. It's an extra edge with everything. It gives me an amazing edge on my memory of recall of different things. If I need confidence in a certain spot, I can turn it on just like that by just asking for support. If I lose track of information in the middle of talking, I can start thinking to show me a yes and to show me a no. And I think I need that piece of information. What's that guy's name? It's Lawrence. Okay, thank you. And that's it. So I can do the thinking while I'm still talking and getting responses, and then the stuff comes. So nobody knows I'm doing it unless they're watching my hand, and I can do it in that complete waking state while I'm doing stuff. And that's really handy.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. No. You can set them up elsewhere, so it's not in your hands, but that's... That's probably going to look weirder if like my eyebrows are going all the time for yeses and noes while you're talking to me.
The eyebrow twitching, involuntarily, it could be a bit unusual. Lance, if people want to reach out to you either for your trainings or anything along those lines, how can they best do that?
My email is lance@branchesofhealing.com.au. I'm pretty easy to find on socials. I don't mind if somebody reaches out with a message or a friend request if you've got some questions or need some support. My website's got all the links, which is branchesofhealing.com.au.
And the website link will be around this podcast as well for anyone looking, so they can click on that. And if people want to join in on the self-hypnosis training coming up with you and Ness, how can they do that?
The branchesofhealing.com.au/events. It's listed in there along with everything else that I've got on. I've got some energy healing ones online coming up as well. I'm doing one of Inez's symptom protocol classes online as well. Anything else is in person, I think, of what else I've got coming up.
Great. Thank you so much for your time this morning to have a chat. It's been really fascinating, actually, to hear some of your takes on things and to recognize how strongly it aligns with mine without realizing that it's going to. So I really appreciate that. For me personally, I'm like, yeah, I'm getting this. I'm liking it. Great. So thank you very much. To everyone who's been watching, I hope you've got as many insights as I have, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time. Until then, take care.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for doing this show. I appreciate this show. I think it's a great thing of what's actually needed in the hypnosis community.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. I create it because I think it's something that I would want out there personally. So I'm creating it for myself, I guess. It's selfish, really. I've got to talk to that part. So,
oh, it's meant to be.
Thanks, everyone. Take care. Thank you for watching the Confident Hypnotherapist podcast. I'd like to invite you, if you're on Facebook, to come and find us on the Hypnotherapist Networking Group, particularly if you're a student or even if you're a seasoned hypnotherapist. You'll find a whole lot of information there regarding continued professional development that will help to build your confidence and effectiveness as a hypnotist. Come and join us. I look forward to seeing you there.